What's sizzling on the flat top at this Crossroads restaurant is more or less a grilled cheese sandwich, the perfect food for soaking up booze when you're out drinking, right? But this grilled cheese has been reimagined to taste like something you might have eaten if you'd stopped by a Kansas City speakeasy during the Prohibition era. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard on KCUR is a food show. Very shortly, our critics will be helping us find the best bar food in town in the 21st century. For now, let's go with KCUR's Sylvia Maria Gross to wet our whistles and see what's cooking at a new venue that's super old school.
Tomstown Distillery produces gin, vodka, and whiskey, all inspired by the man who might just be the patron saint of Kansas City drinkers. It's got Tim Tuohy thinking a lot about the Prohibition era.
Kansas City had an extremely rich beer and alcohol culture that really flourished here as a result of Uncle Tom Pendergast.
Boss Tom basically ran Kansas City during the 1920s and 30s and kept our town wide open for liquor, debauchery, and don't forget the jazz. When this distillery opened in January, there was a tasting room, too, and Tim was tasked with creating a menu of small plates to complement the spirits. The food had to match the elegant room with a high pressed tin ceiling and deco-inspired furniture.
Going into it, I knew that I couldn't just get away with the normal, everyday bar food, which I'll admit I enjoy just as much as the next person.
In other words, no nachos, wings, or chicken fingers. Tim hit the library to find out what was served in the speakeasies of the day.
Some smoked meats, nuts.
But he really drew inspiration from the high-class joints, where Tim says big, opulent meals were served, though not all of them would be appealing to modern palates.
People loved Jell-O molds in the 1920s, and I actually tried my hand at making a few different Jell-O molds to try to keep with the idea of the times, and they ended up just being Jell-O molds.
The menu he's ended up with does include local charcuterie and cheeses. Shrimp cocktail dates back to that era. Tim adds jalapenos, cucumber, and cilantro. He also developed some smoked trout cakes that, weirdly enough, emerged from attempts to make a new chicken a la king. And there's his beef Wellington.
And that's, you know, it's an example of a really opulent dish. It's rich, buttery, has a good deal of fatty content to it.
For his version, Tim makes mini shepherd's pies using a local bakery's croissant dough.
We braise short rib, pull it, portion it, and wrap it along with some pea puree.
He makes a roux out of the gravy, some mashed potatoes, twice baked, and sprinkles the three little Wellington pastries with some orange cubes.
A little spice from the celeriac and butternut squash dice. Cuts through the richness of the dish. Garnish with a little bit of bull's blood or maybe beet greens.
In each creamy, meaty bite, you can taste a hint of the whiskey the short ribs were soaked in. And if that's not rich enough, let's get back to that grilled cheese sandwich, which Tim has made to replicate the flavors of a very old classic, French onion soup. Where he starts is a mix of Parmesan and Gruyere cheese directly on the flat top.
And then we put the buttered slices of bread on top of the cheese. And what that's going to do, it's going to actually crust the outside of the bread and have a nice crunch to it. And then the inside, using an Emmental or a Swiss cheese, and that is going to be the rich, delicious, gooey part that everyone loves when they eat a grilled cheese sandwich.
Here's where the French onion comes in, as a jam.
We caramelize about 20 pounds of onions at a time and cook them down, cover them with white wine and stock. You throw those on the flat top. Gets them warm, helps them melt the cheese once we throw it into the sandwich.
Tim scrapes the sandwich off the grill. The cheese has made a kind of golden brown lattice around the bread. And the taste? Voila, French onion soup. I mean, sandwich. Ultimately, though, what Tim's always thinking about is how to pair food with spirits. When I say gin, he says
sauerkraut, sausages, even pickles.
What about whiskey?
Chocolate, cherries, the chicken liver mousse that we make here.
And when he's not getting grilled by reporters, Tim's turning his attention to the spring menu for Tomstown. He's been wondering whether we're all ready for aspic to come back. You know, meat in gelatin. And he's got two more words for us. Minty peas.
Minty peas do sound good, but I am not sure about aspic. Sylvia Maria Gross just took us time traveling for bar food at Tomstown Distillery. She got through the whole interview without a sip of spirits. It was a workday after all. But the time for restraint is over because now we're talking about cheese. It's a tasty, melty, pubbish treat, and it's hard to imagine bar food without it. Wine goes with cheese. Beer goes with cheese. Everything goes with cheese. So we've invited Lincoln Broadbooks from the Better Cheddar to tell us about spring cheeses that are coming out now. Hi, Lincoln.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Before we explore the cheeses you've brought in, you are an American Cheese Society certified cheese professional, and you're one of the first cheesemongers in the United States to earn that distinction. That is pretty serious devotion to cheese right there.
Yeah, I studied a lot to get that certification, and yeah, I'm into cheese, definitely.
How did you get into cheese?
After college, years and years ago, I got a chance to travel around Europe a little bit, do the backpack thing, and the easy thing to do was eat cheese and eat bread. It was pretty cheap there at the time, and so I really got into cheese there. And
yeah, when you don't have to have it imported, that changes things.
Exactly, yeah. So it just kind of blossomed from there. I ended up getting a part-time job at the Better Cheddar and then really got into cheese. So,
would you say it became really serious between you and cheese?
Well, it was I read about cheese. I made cheese. I was just really into the whole process of cheese. Turning milk into a solid is really interesting to me. There's science behind it. There's an art behind it. So it got in my brain and it stuck. So,
Everyone may realize that cheese is a really seasonal food. Can you explain how the seasons affect cheese?
Yeah. Seasonality is really important to cheese. Depending on what the animals are eating, that's a big deal. And so in the winter, you'll have animals who are a lot of times eating dry feed, and that affects the milk in good ways and sometimes bad ways. And then as spring and summer come along, they're out on pasture, they're eating fresh grass. That definitely translates to the finished product.
Can you describe the difference in taste when you're talking about a cheese that's been made from the milk of an animal that's been eating fresh grass?
Especially in spring cheeses and some summer cheeses, the fresh grass, the herbs, the flowers that they may be eating definitely translate to the milk and the flavor. So you get an herbaceous flavor, especially in goat cheeses in the spring. And you get more balanced flavor. And it really just depends on the cheese. I mean, there are some cheeses that some cheesemakers only want to make in the winter because that cheese is better for that milk that they're getting in the winter. And then they'll make one that...
So they maybe just don't want that herbaceous quality you
exactly.
were describing?
Yeah. So it really just depends, but it's very important to artisanal and farmstead cheesemaking because it doesn't... You don't have standardized milk. You want that difference between the seasons to show through.
Yeah. Does the difference between cheese, like spring cheese, does that match well with other flavors that would be coming out in, say, produce or spring meats or things like that?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I mean, especially, I keep on going back to goat cheese, but goat cheese in the spring, you have this herbaceousness, you have a lemoniness, and it just kind of says spring. And so, pairing that with herbs, different spring vegetables, radishes, things like that, that are coming out, it definitely lends itself to the cheese. Yeah.
So let's do a little tasting. You've brought in some cheeses, and Danny Alexander is here from the newsroom to do some sampling on her birthday.
All right.
Oh, thank you. It's my special treat.
Happy birthday, Danny.
Thanks.
It's, Danny is one of the producers of Up to Date. Mm-hmm. So let's do this tasting. Lincoln, what do you want Danny to try first?
Well, I have five cheeses here.
Okay.
But the first one I want you to try, this is actually just a... Here, I'll hand it to you.
Yeah, you just point which one you want me to do first.
Okay, so yeah, that is just a fresh goat cheese made in Indiana from Caprio
Farms.
Explain
what you mean by fresh, first of all.
Fresh in cheese means it's an unaged cheese. Basically, they curdle the milk and they drain the whey from the cheese, and you get a soft, fresh cheese, kind of like cream cheese. So if you've had cream cheese, you've had...
And that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. And so this is goat's milk.
Mm-hmm.
They do a really balanced goat's milk cheese, fresh cheese.
There's a tone on the back end of that, too, when you come out of that, that's very distinctive.
Yes, yes. And that's the goat's milk you're tasting.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will call it goaty or bucky.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, in this cheese, it's very faint. They do really, really good cheese.
And that's one of, I mean, people, when you get a cheese plate or if you get a goat's milk cheese, usually from the grocery store, it's one of the sort of like log or patty kind of shaped cheeses that appears sort of like the outside of a powdered donut.
Yes.
But classier.
Yeah.
That's got a wonderful texture too. It's nice. And it's got a wonderful creaminess to it.
Yeah, very creamy.
Mm-hmm.
It's creamy, but at the same time, it's kind of flinty. And it's...
It's like I said, nice. that after that last note lingers, which is very nice, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So remind us the name and type of cheese we're talking about.
So this is just a fresh goat cheese. It's from Capriola Farms there in Indiana, right on the border of Indiana and Kentucky. Yeah.
And that's a Midwestern cheese. Is there a particular, like, prairie flavor now that there's getting to be quite a number of Midwestern cheesemakers?
Yeah. I don't know that there is. The thing with cheese is all the cheesemakers in America, it's just the way it is. We're copying French cheeses and European cheeses. But there are some cheeses that are starting to, you know, take on their own Midwest flair. Beige Farms in Missouri has been doing really, really good goat cheese. And you have Green Dirt Farm here who does really good sheep's milk cheese, which is one of the ones we'll taste here. And I don't know if they're taking on that, like, real specific, like, I can tell that that's, you know, Missouri or Kansas or whatever, but they're doing it really, really well.
So, well, why don't we go ahead and try some of that Green Dirt Farm cheese? I'll disclose just quickly that I used to work there, but that was a long time ago. I had nothing to do with this cheese you're about to taste.
Gotcha.
Okay, so which one are we looking at?
Okay, so this second cheese here, mm-hmm. this is called Mayfield, and this is one of Green Dirt Farm's new cheeses that they're coming out with. This is a Taleggio-style cheese, which is a Northern Italian specialty cheese. This is sheep's milk. It's washed rind. And I'll let you...
Boy, that is distinctive.
It is
distinctive, in a very good way.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Can I just say that I'm really jealous of watching you, because this has the texture, it has a solid rind,
mm-hmm.
and then everything on the inside is totally gooey and oozy. Yeah. And I love that.
I'm
not
what you think of when you think when you tend to think rind. I mean, it's totally edible. It's got a muskier than the goat.
Yeah.
Boy, that's, it's, again, creamy, musky, smooth.
Yeah, since this is a ripened cheese, you definitely, there's going to be different flavors than a fresh cheese. You can see this is a well-ripened cheese.
Mm-hmm.
It's very gooey inside, but it is washed, and so that lends to a funkiness,
mm-hmm.
And that is what they want.
And I do,
cheese.
I like funky cheese,
good.
Yeah.
So like James Brown funky?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
What's next?
Okay. Next, this is another great spring cheese is Pecorino Toscano Fresco. And we have this at the Better Cheddar this time of year. It's Italian sheep's milk.
Mm-hmm.
And it is aged for a couple months.
It's got a bit of grain to it.
Yeah, it's a little bit grainy. They don't even form a rind on it. It's just aged for a couple months, so it's what they would consider a fresh Pecorino.
I don't like to compare it to another type of cheese, but yeah. It has a bit of a Swiss quality to it.
Yeah.
A little bit toward the nutty side,
yeah.
I would say.
Oh, with sheep's milk, you definitely get nuttiness. That is a very good characteristic of sheep's
mm-hmm.
milk. But also you have this, it's tangy. It's kind of lemony as well.
Yeah, but not, subtler. More subtle.
Yeah. And this melts really well
on
pizzas
know.
And things like that. It's nice.
See, I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, I could make myself, just the cheeses here, a heck of a grilled cheese sandwich.
Exactly.
I bet. Mm. Yeah. And it looks like is there one more over there that you want to talk to us about?
Yeah. There's actually two more, but that next one there is, since it's spring, it's, you know, thinking St. Paddy's Day, we always get a lot of Irish cheeses in. This is called Gubeen, and it's from County Cork, Ireland, a place called Shule. And it's a smoked cow's milk cheese.
Ooh.
And they smoke it with oak wood.
Danny?
Wait.
What do you think?
Wait for
I'm letting it roll. I know. Oh, wow. Yes.
It's light, mm-hmm. lightly smoked. So it's not the kind of, we like smoked here.
Yeah,
Kansas
and sometimes
City.
They overdo it.
Yeah,
which so I can't stand.
This is cold smoked, lightly smoked, kind of like a good smoked salmon, cold smoked salmon
and,
would
yes,
be.
Yes, and it's got that great, what I think of as a great in-between texture. It's not as smooth as some of the early ones. It's not super hard or grainy like a well-aged cheddar would be.
Yes.
But I will tell you that of them so far, that's about the first characteristic that hits you is that smoke. It takes a while to find the rest of it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and you put smoke on anything, that's what you taste.
mm-hmm. And can you remind us what this type of cheese is that we've just described?
Well, it's its own thing. It is a cow's milk cheese. It's semi-hard.
Mm-hmm.
Gubeen, they also make a real traditional one as well, which is washed. Kind of like the Mayfield we just tried, and it gets a little funky. But they skip the washing on the smoked one.
And when you talk about washing, you're talking about during the aging process, the cheese comes out, is periodically washed and replaced to continue aging, rather than it just ages without that.
Yes, they will take anywhere from a couple weeks to a couple months, and they'll wash it every day in the aging room, and that grows a bacteria that forms a rind and it gets stinky. Yeah.
The good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Last but not least.
Okay. So this is called Berg Blumenkäse, and this is a Swiss cheese. This is raw milk. And it's the reason why I picked it for a good spring cheese is because they wash this as well, but they take a brine and they put flowers and herbs. And they soak it in that.
Wow. And that is just, that is the most amazing Swiss. I wouldn't even, it's like in a Swiss category all its own.
Yeah.
Danny, does it taste floral? I mean.
It actually, yeah, when if you were going to say you got to taste the spring out of a cheese, this would be one that I said that I would think does do it. I mean, I hate talking with it's like bad manners. Here I am talking with my mouth full, but give me a second. Yeah, it's good. It has. It's not. I don't want to say it's the like a classic nutty like you get in a Swiss, but it is certainly a full without being a heavy tasting cheese.
Yeah.
And yes, I would say if I had to say anything, yes, it does give you those spring tones. Definitely. Now I understand what you mean. It's nice to have a cheese and somebody says, okay, this is what I mean when I say a springtone cheese and go, oh, now I get it. It's kind of like tasting wine when somebody goes, okay, what you're tasting there is this and this, and you go, oh, now I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
That's wonderful.
Good.
So the name of this cheese again?
This is Berg Blumenkäse.
Oh.
And it basically means mountain flowers or mountain flower cheese.
There's that one very particular note to it that, yeah, I would say is that floral note.
Yeah,
wow,
just a little
fabulous.
Herbaceous and, mm-hmm. and floral. They also they wash it with the herbs and the flowers, but they also lay it on beds of straw and herbs as they age it. So
that sounds so rustic and charming
and coddled.
Yeah, that's in a in a Swiss mountain cheese, it's the word rustic is perfect for that kind of cheese.
Lincoln, yeah. If you were going to melt one of these cheeses on something, what would it be?
Oh, pretty much anything. But yeah, the Swiss, the Bergen-Blumen Käse, that melts really, really well. And I would probably just melt it on crusty bread or make a fondue out of it. Yeah.
Since we're talking bar food today, pairings are kind of the order of the day. What kinds of drinks do you like to pair with the spring cheese? Like wine, beer, something perhaps softer?
Yeah. I mean, as far as we talked about goat cheeses, spring goat cheeses, real popular is Loire Valley wines. So Vouvray, Chinon, what else?
Vouvray is one of my favorites.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those will go really, really well with spring goat cheeses. Those are nice. I prefer, like, if you were going to do beer, I really like farmhouse ales, kind of like Saison Brett that Boulevard does with cheese. They have some funkiness in those beers that matches with cheese. So it's really, really nice. And you can definitely do anything. I love pairing cheeses with tea or even soft drinks. You can do a lot of stuff. So,
Lincoln Broadbooks of the Better Cheddar, thank you.
Thank you.
And Danny Alexander, happy birthday.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we're going to hit the bars in search of food. Your favorite bar food in town coming right up at 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Back in a minute. And we're back. The food critics are here. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Central Standard's critics this morning are Charles Ferruzza with The Pitch. Hi, Charles.
Hey, how are you, Gina?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Mary Block is with us, too. She's a blogger at Around the Block. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And a special guest for the topic of bar food, Pete Doolin. He writes for Feast Magazine, but perhaps more importantly, he's written a book all about beer in Kansas City, the KC Ale Trail. So he might have sampled a bite or two watering holes around town, you know, for research.
Yeah, absolutely. Research is important.
Hi, Pete.
Good morning.
Pete, what do you look for in a food that's meant to go with a few drinks?
I think it needs to be just really satisfying. You know, it depends on the drink, whether it's, you know, beer, wine, or a cocktail. I think beer and wine are, in particular, are really versatile, can pair with a lot of different foods. And so I think when you talk about bar foods, like right off the bat, you think of a more casual environment that, you know, it's probably beer, and then, you know, fried food is like the typical thing. But there's so much more that's available than that. Bar food has come a long way from the days of restaurants that would just, you know, pour some pre-made product, you know, into a fryer and then serve it up.
Are you saying there's something wrong with deep fried pepper poppers?
No, not at all. I mean, if that's your thing. But, you know, those can be made like from scratch and taste delicious. But there's a huge spectrum of bar food that's available now.
You know, let's talk about how we all define bar food. My definition is kind of fuzzy, like many things involving bars tend to be. I know bar food when I see it. Can someone here do better than that?
You mean better in quality and style?
But better in defining bar food.
Well, I think bar food has changed so much over the years. I mean, really, it's not as awful as it used to be. When I was first starting to go to bars, it was almost, as Pete said, invariably fried food. Bar food has always been traditionally salty food. And fried food sort of falls into that category. But, you know, it has come a long way from nachos and, you know, fried
mushrooms.
Now it's, you know, you could actually make a meal out of, you know, small plates.
Well, and a lot of restaurants now have a special bar menu, right, or allow you to eat the entire meal at the bar. And they promote that as another way to get people in the door.
And sometimes the bar menu is more appealing to me than the actual menu.
Like the lounge at Blue Stem or the lounge at the American, you would not think of those as bars you're going to go hang out at, but the menus are great.
And well, I think it's also a sign of like how our dining habits have changed as well, where we want to get out and socialize, and then while we're socializing with friends or coworkers, you know, to have a drink and to have food to go with that. And to me, it's almost kind of an extension of those traditions from other cultures, like tapas, where you're having a glass of wine and a small plate and a bite to eat. So, you know, examples that Mary.
Can we talk about different cultures and how, because like when I think about the European and American approaches, they are very different. We've been talking about the sort of classic American nachos, wings. I'd add French fries to that list. In Europe, you've got olives and almonds and plates of thin sliced cold meats like prosciutto.
Yeah, because, you know, it's I mean, the gambit hasn't changed. They're all salty food to make you drink more.
Absolutely. And I think like our tastes have changed as well. Like where people aren't just satisfied with those fried foods. They want things that are better crafted, you know, to use that word, artisan, you know, whether it's cured meats or cheeses that Lincoln, you know, was talking about, that, you know, a cheese plate that's available, say like at Westport Cafe and Bar. You know, they have a nice like five cheese plate that you can sit down and enjoy. And experience those different flavors and aromas with a glass of wine or a cocktail. So there's
sounds
a
lot. Nice.
Yes.
Well, let's start hearing what's on your list for best bar food in Kansas City. We want our listeners to chime in on this too. Tell us where you go, what you order, and if you're feeling inspired, you can even tell us what drink pairs best with it. 816-235-2888. That number again, 816-235-2888. 2888. Charles, start us off. You're directing us to the Majestic, where you've included a crab cake on your recommended orders. The crab cake.
It's a nice big crab cake, too, and you could actually share it. And it's what I like about it is, you know, most crab cakes in this city are heavily breaded, you know, made with a lot of breading. This is a real crabby crab cake and delicious. And, you know, they have their own bar menu, which I like. And one of the things I really like on that bar menu, my two favorite burgers in town right now are the burger at the bar at Blue Stem. That was a mouthful. And the half-pound steak burger, not a hamburger, with fries at the Majestic. Really a wonderful.
And you can get that on the bar menu there?
Yeah, absolutely. And a wonderful, you know, it's a great meal to have. You know, in lieu of a dinner.
And a burger goes well with a beer or a glass of wine.
Or a Coke.
Yeah, very
true. It sounds very much like, I mean, there's almost like an atmosphere in the food you're describing. When we talk about bar food, maybe part of what we're talking about is food that captures that casual sort of convivial spirit.
Right. I think it's true.
Well, Pete, tell me about Lucky Boys. I haven't been there.
You should go. It's a fantastic place in the West Bottoms.
Pete, where is it?
It's across the street from where the Golden Ox used to be.
So it's right next to Voltaire.
Yes, yes. And it's the former space was called Grandma's. Three guys took it over, and it's called Lucky Boys. It's a classic dive bar, but they serve fantastic food there. And some of the dishes.
Do they have a real kitchen?
They do. Okay. They do. So one of the first dishes that they became known for is the Louisville hot chicken sandwich. One of the owners, I believe it's his grandmother that's from Louisville, and he's worked really hard like to make this amazing chicken sandwich that has this fantastic crust on it. It's spicy and it's just really satisfying and delicious.
Go on.
Yes. So that's one of my favorite dishes. Another dish on the menu is the pastrami and rye. And so he's worked really hard to create this amazing pastrami from scratch and then slices it up and serves it on this great sandwich.
And is this is also a drinking establishment or no?
Yes, absolutely.
So if you were going there as our beer connoisseur, if you were going there for a beer and one of these sandwiches you've just described, any pairing tips?
They've got a small tap selection, so it kind of depends on your taste. I mean, you could go for, you know, a classic, you know, Boulevard wheat or pale ale, or you know, a hams in can, just, you know, good old-fashioned blue-collar beer.
This is Lucky Boys in the West Bottoms.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to get right to Mary Block's recommendations in a second, but I want to take this call from Brendan in Westport. He's calling 816-235-2888. Hi, Brendan.
Hi there.
What can you share?
Well, I agree. You know, Boulevard, you can get pretty much anywhere now, and I love especially, I was talking to the producer, I love the chicken waffles at Beer Kitchen with any of the Boulevard beers. They're great, but especially like in the spring with Boss Tom's, you know, being the good Southern boy I am, it's something you get used to, you know, at home, and that Beer Kitchen, they do it right. So if there are any other fellow Southerners in the KC area, go to Beer Kitchen, they do it right. It's a delicious, like, cheddar cornmeal waffle with, like, cornflake deep-fried chicken on top, and they give you a chicken gravy and a maple syrup, I think, with it, and, you know, like I said, especially right now in the spring, like, with Boss Tom, like, that's the best combo. That's the go-to brunch for me and my friends.
So bar food as brunch food.
Yeah, exactly. when you go to brunch, you're probably working off the bar visit you had the night before. So, you know, why not combat the two?
Okay. Well, so that's Beer Kitchen in Westport. Mary, something on your list has intrigued me. You're recommending in your bar food list a handful of places for their steamed buns. What are those?
Well, buns, they're a big thing right now, and I think they got going in the trendy area because of Momofuku in New York. And it's a soft dough that's steamed, and then it's kind of a Chinese version of a sandwich. And the traditional way is pork belly and a slice of homemade pickle and hoisin sauce. And people are now doing riffs on that.
Why do you think of this as bar food?
Just because you know, you pick it up in your hands, and it goes with any kind of drink you want to eat.
That's
and I wouldn't think of it as
a bar food, Mary.
Well, and it's not something you would necessarily sit and eat for a whole meal, but it's a nice snack.
So where do you go for steamed buns in Kansas City?
Well, there are three places I love. At Novel, they have it just on their happy hour menu, and that's got crispy pork belly, pork cheek and jowl, and some smoked tomato. And then at Extra Virgin, they always switch it up. Sometimes it's the more traditional. Right now, I think they've got it with pork and spicy ramp kimchi. And then the American Lounge has one that's, I think it's my favorite. Instead of doing a bun, they have a homemade English muffin, and very small, with pork belly, XO sauce, which is a spicy Asian sauce, and homemade pickles. And it's fabulous. And now I could make a meal out of that.
I've had that version. It's delicious.
It is.
So, Mary, will you just quickly relist the names of the establishments where people can try this?
Yes.
Because I got so lost in your dreamy descriptions that I might have missed that, and I bet some listeners did too.
Fair enough. Novel at near Summit and 17th, but that's just happy hour, which is 5 to 6 p.m. Extra Virgin in the Crossroads, and the Lounge at the American.
Charles, you also have a recommendation of the Asian variety. You're recommending Chinese bar food at Bo Ling's.
Yeah, I mean, I like Bo Ling's restaurant. I don't often sit at the bar because, you know, my favorite time to sit at the bar or have a dinner at the bar is when I'm by myself. You know, it's a great place to be anonymous. And the bar at Bo Ling's, you know, you could have a nice little tasty meal with the Vietnamese egg rolls, which are nice and crunchy, or the crispy eggplant. That's my perfect idea of a vegetarian meal because it's fried. And I like the chicken lettuce wraps, too. It's, you know, it's cool.
Okay, so Charles is recommending some salty fare.
At Bowling's on the Plaza.
And Pete, tempura is making an appearance on your list when you recommend the American.
Yes, they have some shiitake mushrooms that they do in tempura. And it's a version of fried food, but it's a lighter batter. And it's just something that adds a little bit of that crispness to the dish with the tempura crust, but then you get that succulent mushroom in there. And it's one of the many items that they have available in the lounge for a happy hour.
What else do you like to get there?
I also like the king crab fried rice. It's Chef Michael Corvino. It's his version of fried rice, but he kind of jazzes it up with these succulent morsels of king crab in the dish.
Succulent morsels. Well, KCUR Central Standard will be right back after this short break. There's still a little time left to share your recommendations and theories when it comes to bar food. What's your order of choice when you've had a few? 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. Welcome back to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today, our food critics are talking about bar food. For some people, that means a light dish you can order at the bar of a fancy restaurant with a glass of wine. And for others, it's a salty, greasy, starchy, handheld delicacy meant to soak it up and keep you thirsty. Whatever it is, I'm here with Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Pete Doolin, who have been starting us off with some great recommendations. And we'll get to your calls in just a second. We did talk about melted cheese earlier in the show, and Mary, picking up on that theme, tell us what you like at Port Fonda.
They have a couple versions of queso fundido, which is basically a Mexican version of fondue. It's melted cheese in basically a small little cast iron skillet. And they have one that has tons of mushrooms and another that's made with chorizo. And instead of the typical corn chip that you would dip it in, they bring it to you with soft tortillas. And you just spoon it up and slather it on the tortilla, and it's pretty great.
This conversation is inspiring such great word choices. We had the succulent morsels, and now we have the slathering it on. I'm loving this. Okay, let's talk. So that was queso fundido at Port Fonda.
Yes.
And now we've got Courtney in Kansas City on the line. Hi, Courtney.
Hello.
What are you recommending?
I just wanted to recommend one of my favorite bars in Westport, Savaw, the Champagne Bar. They've got a beautiful bar. It's totally reminds me of being in Beauty and the Beast when I go in there. So it's a beautiful setting. And they just have a great little assortment of bar foods, whether it's a little cheese plate with some cheeses from Green Dirt Farms or oysters or one of Elise Landry's beautiful pastries or pineapple upside down cake. Or they always have some lovely dessert option too that goes great with a glass of wine or champagne bubbles. And not to mention the service is great. Caitlin Corcoran has a great team of wonderful service. And I just think it's a great place and a beautiful bar and a lovely place to get a little noshed.
Well, that's so Courtney has a rousing recommendation for Sava. Anyone else have something to add about Sava in Westport?
I want to say it's intimate place. This brings up a question that I wanted to ask you two. Do you ever feel guilty ordering food at a bar when the bar is packed and no one else is eating?
No.
Wait, why
I never
would you
feel guilty ordering food, Charles.
Well, sometimes I feel, because when you eat at a bar, you take up more space than you usually do.
Oh. Wow.
It's also pretty noisy, too.
But they encourage you to eat at these places.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the...
That gets you to stay longer, too.
Drink
right.
more.
And, you know, and maybe if, like, that dish is really good, then it's going to attract the interest of people around you asking about that
wafting
dish. I've had that experience many times where people are like, well, what's that? You know, we were talking about poutine earlier before the show. And, like, that's one of those dishes where if somebody's not familiar with it, then, you know, they may ask. And, like, I mean, I've shared food for my plate with perfect strangers to get them to try the food because I like to, you know.
And presumably if it's done right, it'll make you thirsty and you'll order another drink.
So it's a shared experience.
So then the bar being so sort of crowded ends up being a great marketing opportunity for the kitchen.
Sure, absolutely.
And we have someone tweeting us to tell us about Avenue's Bistro. Excuse me, someone called in and couldn't stay to share Avenue's Bistro. And Charles, that's on your list.
Yeah, it's one of the more European style bars, I would say. It's removed from the restaurant proper, and they have their own, you know, bar menu with deliciously salty / sweet / fried things. And I really like the bacon wrapped dates, and they have a Bavarian plate with house made bratwurst and fried potatoes. And you know, even though I don't drink anymore, it's the kind of dish that makes you want a beer,
or maybe feel like you've even had one.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk to that was Avenue's Bistro. Let's talk to Dan and Shawnee. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. How about you?
Very good. I just want to talk about yesterday. I had lunch at Boulevard Tavern, and we ended up having some of their new corn dogs and also the KFC wings. But the corn dogs were really great. They were kind of a homemade option that I hadn't seen before in a bar in Kansas City where they house smoked some sausage and made them fresh. So really quite delicious, and ended up turning my dining partners on to a few Tank Sevens to finish off the meal. So just really great stuff.
So that's Boulevard Tavern, which perhaps evidently is on Southwest Boulevard. But Dan, you had corn dogs and wings for lunch. That is a lunch of champions.
It is. I felt great after.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Pete, you have something on your list that is called OCD nachos, and I kind of can't resist a dish with a clinical diagnosis.
So that's a dish that's at Martin City Brewing Company. And Martin City Brewing Company has actually kind of two businesses. There's the original pub side where they serve kind of upscale pub food. And then across the street next door, they have a wood-fired pizza restaurant. And these nachos, I'm not sure exactly why they came up with the name OCD nachos, but it just sounds so appealing. And it's one of these dishes where you have nachos just slathered with a mountain of ingredients. And it's really fresh and savory and delicious. And to me, like, it's the consummate bar food because it's you eat it with your fingers. It's easy to share. And, you know, it's a little messy and goes great with a beer.
So that's Martin City
Brewing Company.
Brewing Company. Let's go to another caller. We've got Dylan in Volker. Hi, Dylan.
Hello.
What's your recommendation?
My recommendation is the pork rinds at Eat Me, which services the Westport Saloon and the Buzzard Beach.
Go on.
The pork rinds are absolutely fantastic. They're fresh fried. When they bring them out to you, when you eat them, they're still popping because they're that hot. And they have this great seasoned salt that gets sprinkled all over them. And there's always a bottle of hot sauce so you can drizzle it on top so you can make them hot pork rinds. And they're the perfect complement to any beer.
Pork rinds. Dylan, can you try to explain to me the appeal of pork rinds? I'm so sorry, but I don't get it. And, you know, I know a lot of people who seem to love them, and I want to understand.
The draw is that it's crunchy like a potato chip, but it's also light and airy, unlike a potato chip. When you eat pork rinds, they don't feel like dense in your mouth. They're light. They have that wonderful crunch, that tiny bit of salt. And if you're to try any, I would recommend the ones that Eat Me.
I'm laughing because everyone in this room is making the same faces. And is there anyone here who can speak to pork rinds? Pete's raising his hand.
I like them. I don't eat them often. But when you have good pork rinds, to me, like, they're really satisfying for all the reasons that the caller mentioned.
What exactly are they?
So it's fried pork skin, basically.
Really healthy.
Yes. Well, it's, you know, not all bar food's healthy.
I know. Most of it is not.
Right.
The other white meat.
Yeah. It's what I like about them is that it's one of those foods that's really audible, and there's something that can be satisfying, like eating popcorn or potato chips. And so you get this fried food that's really light and has this really satisfying crunch to it.
Anywhere else you like to get pork rinds besides the ones that Dylan just described?
Not off the top of my head, although recently, in the past week or so, I had kind of a seafood equivalent at Jarocho. It was just one of the things that the chef made where he took fish skin and he fried the fish skin in strips and then tossed it with a special seasoning that was really spicy. And it was fantastic. It was like chicharrones, but slightly fishy and salty and spicy. And I don't know that he has that all the time.
Where is this again?
It was at Jarocho, which is a Mexican seafood restaurant in Kansas City, Kansas. And the chef there, Carlos Falcon, does amazing food there, both on the menu, and he comes up with a lot of things off the cuff, too.
Mary Block, you are telling us about some good potatoes, and it is amazing, actually, that we've made it this far without discussing the potato as a soaky, salty, starchy, drinking food.
Very true. And the potatoes, bravas at Extra Virgin, really hit the mark. They are atypical in that the dish usually has chunks of potatoes in a romesco sauce, which is a Mediterranean sort of a smoked pepper sauce, spicy. And at Extra Virgin, these are basically thick potato chips that have been smothered in the romesco sauce, and they're addictive. I mean, if you've got four people, order two orders because you just go through them so fast, and they're fabulous.
So these are the
potatoes bravas
at Extra Virgin.
Yeah, and they're a perfect bar food.
And Mary, you're also directing us to Summit Bar and Grill. Tell me, we've talked about some nachos already, nacho being kind of a classic bar food. They've got pot roast nachos?
They do. And unlike the typical ground beef, these are served with shredded pot roast, and they've got queso and
corn. You should
say,
this is not a pile of corn chips. This is, those pot roast nachos are, they're not traditional. Yeah.
They are more constructed.
What do you mean?
Each one has the pot roast, the corn, the pepper on it, as opposed to what Pete was talking about, which is a pile. and there are other places like Tavern in the Village. They kind of make their nacho for you. But these have so you get a bite of everything in each chip, which is nice.
You just kind of reminded me of something I heard on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me this weekend, where they were talking about how millennials apparently don't like cereal because you have to add milk. And I like that there's someone who's taken the time to construct your nacho for you.
Exactly. Well, and if somebody doesn't like milk, they ought to go to Momofuku in New York and have cereal milk ice cream. It's ice cream that's made with cereal milk.
Ooh. Okay, back on topic, sorry. Pete, we cannot let this hour go by without me taking advantage of the opportunity you've given me to say the word fluffernutter.
Fluffernutter. That is a great sandwich that's available at the Brick, which is down in the Crossroads. So fluffernutter is this amazing sandwich that has peanut butter and then marshmallow fluff that's layered on this toasted bread, and it's just really satisfying.
I think it's a weird...
Where do you get it?
At the Brick.
It's a teenage dish, you know? I can't imagine anyone over 13 wanting it, but if you say so.
It's fun, you know? It's when you want something that's not a meat option.
Sweet.
It is sweet. But you can...
This is a very munchies kind of selection.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, you're at a bar and you just get that craving. It's good.
Okay, so what else do you get at the Brick? Because that's... a bar with bar food.
All right. So they have a lot of amazing food there. And two other dishes that I really like are the Cuban sandwich. It's just a great version of a Cuban. And then also Zim's wings, hot wings made with Zim's hot sauce.
All with really good French fries.
Yes.
You guys, the music totally surprised me. I was so into this conversation. Our time is up for today's show. We hope it helps you enjoy your weekend to its maximum potential. Pete Doolin, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Pete's book is called The Casey Ale Trail. And Charles Ferruza, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Gina.
Mary Block, it's been a pleasure.
Good to be with you.
Our list of the best bar foods in Kansas City, with some extra items on that list online, will be at kcur.org later today. Check it out and pass it around to all your friends. And if you missed our visit to the kitchen at Tomstown Distillery, you can find that there too, kcur.org. It's the weekend, but you can always talk to us on Twitter. We are at KCURCST, and in case you can't tell, we love to talk. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays, like today, by Jen Chen. We get lots of help from interns Coy Duggar and Glenn Frizzell. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.